Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, October 18th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on that Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sustaining lifestyle. I would also like you to take a moment to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Once again, I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Established in 1957,
GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. Yeah, it's Monday, folks. We made it through another week together last week and had a really fun Friday radio show last Friday. But it is Monday, and here we go again together. Once again, we'll try to make it through another work week together. We appreciate you all turning in live at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Maybe this is your breakfast time if it's out on the West Coast. Maybe it's mid-morning if you're in the middle of the country and in the heartland. Maybe it is 12 noon and you're taking a little break from work to have a nice tuna or chicken salad sandwich and some carrot sticks and your nice glass or nice smoothie and whatever you're enjoying this morning. We're glad you tuned in today. It's now time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, Pat Gorman. Hey, Pat, welcome.
Hey, Whisper. Great to be on the show today. I think it's going to be a fabulous week, I think. But first things first, now, how is Jen's father? I understood from the Facebook that he was in the hospital, so how is he doing?
He's doing, I think, much better. He's been sick for about 3 days, or he was sick for three days before Friday, and I hadn't been eating anything. And then, of course, because he was sick, he stopped taking his heart medication. And so, finally, I think it was Friday or was it Saturday morning? I think it was Saturday morning. We called to see how he was doing. He only lives about a mile from us. And he, of course, sounded awful, still in bed, not eating anything. We thought he had, the flu. He thought he had the flu and would it just get over. We found, actually, a little twist to the story, we found an actual tick on him a couple of weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago. He came by the house about 10:30 and he said, "Is this a tick?" And it was right there on his chest near his neck, and sure enough. And so we couldn't get that sucker out, so he went to the ER up the road, and they took it out, gave him information. And so two and two came together. Finally, he was so reluctant, finally Jen was able to crack the whip and get him up there to the little doc in the box first. And when they saw his high temperature and learned he had a tick, they were thinking Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and so they said, "Go to the ER now, and don't stop, go and collect $200, you know, don't stop and get a chalupa. Get right over there." Hang on just a second. Okay. And so he got up there, and then after 6 hours later, 6 hours, I walked out of the – I went to go by to visit, and I was walking out right by the ER desk, and I was like, I was talking to my mother-in-law. I was like, 6 hours here, and they still have no clue what he's got or what's going on? I said, I was just stabbing the knife in a little bit more to the ER staff. I'm like, 6 hours? Shoot. And then finally, they have to justify
charging you $3,000. So 3 hours is bad. 6 hours is $6,000.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. There you go. So I was thinking, oh, sheesh. And then finally, even that night when we went up and took June's mom out to dinner, we went up there and great. How about this for technicality or for technical speaking? I said, look, we're going to take her out to dinner so she can get some food. She's been here all day. Have you heard anything? He says, well, we just heard that they're going to move him up to a room. He's going to be admitted. And the doctor is calling it. Now, how technical is that? The doctor is calling it pneumonia. So I still wasn't real satisfied of whatever the heck was going on with my father-in-law. The doctor's at this point calling it pneumonia. So anyway, so he got up there to the floor. And then Sunday morning early, about 5:30, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, they moved him to ICU just for overnight, I guess. Maybe it was leaving earlier. But anyway, just because they found out he hadn't been on his heart medication because he was sick and he wasn't taking it. And so they wanted to get all that squared away and wanted to be able to monitor him closely. But he only stayed in ICU for about a day. And he's back on the regular floor now. Not sure when he's going to get home. You know, pneumonia when you're 78, 79 years old can be devastating. So I want to make sure, and I'm sure they want to make sure that he's completely over it and can get home and get on the road to recovery. So I have no idea how many more days that he will be there in the hospital to recover. Hopefully it's longer than shorter. So because when he gets home, you know, he's just he spits nails. I mean, he's going to go out and chop wood as soon as he gets home. I know him. And so he needs to stay there as long as they will allow him to stay there. So when he does get home and starts chopping wood and splitting wood, then he'll be able to handle that without having any remnants of the pneumonia. So thank you very much for asking. Thank you for all that follow our fans and friends on Facebook for all of your continued prayers. As soon as we find out, Jen posted it first, and I posted it, and what a great way to get the word out. I believe in the power of prayer, and we appreciate everybody's prayers. So looks like he's kind of turned the corner there and on the way to recovery and getting back home and chopping that wood that he loves to do for his old wood stove right in the center of their old farmhouse. Keeps it nice and toasty over the winter. So, thank you very much. I'll get some more updates later today, I'm sure.
Wow. Well, that's quite a story. My gosh. And so I didn't quite catch it then. Is it related to a tick?
Nope, unrelated.
Totally not related.
That
was just a coincidence that a tick was there. And so, okay.
Correct. At least that's what we think. I don't know how you test for that or if there is a test or if there's a serum or a special antibiotic that you get. I have no clue. No clue at all. We didn't treat much Rocky Mountain spotted fever when I was a paramedic in downtown Atlanta for many, many years. So that's just something that I wasn't real familiar with. You don't pick up many folks in downtown that have that. So it was something that I was not, you know, knew of it but not treated it before, haven't picked it, picked patients up with it before. So it's just new on mine as well. But nope, don't think it was related at all. So other than that, we had a great weekend. We still decided early Sunday morning to drive down to the farmhouse and talk with the contractor that's renovating our bathroom. Wanted to see the progress. Jen really was excited to see the progress. So we woke up early Sunday morning, drove down, and my duty, I've taken it upon myself, my duty at church is to ring the bell whenever we're down there, and the big church bell. And so I love to do that. So I was like, you know, you're probably going a little bit faster than I should have to get down there to ring that bell at 9:45 to start a Sunday school. And so we had just enough time to open the back door of the farmhouse, go in, take a look at the bathroom, look around, say, yeah, this looks really good. Now I got to go ring the bell. So run across the street. Church is right across the street from the farmhouse. We love it. Long commute, let me tell you. Run right across the street and ring that bell, and then we went right down to our friend's house and made the phone call just to check on her dad, and then attended church, went back to the house, met with the contractor, talked about this, that, and the other, and then got on the road and headed right on back up home to check on her dad. So we and Saturday we had a lot of free time together. Jen and I did a little window shopping, if you will, and things like that. So we had it overall a really good weekend. And lots of comments in the chat room about ringing the church bell. I love it. You know, a funny story there. It's a very, very small town, population of about, I don't know, 400 people, and you know, this town is 1 square mile, so we love it. No four traffic lights in the entire county. So, but yeah, the old church bell, they used to ring it every Sunday morning. But there was an elderly couple that lived right next door to the church, and apparently they just didn't like it, even though, you know, they were up, whatever. They didn't, you know. So anyway, well, I think since many years ago, he had since passed away and made the trip home. And then I think she, her kids had put her, I think, in a nursing home. Boy, she was a great lady, too. When I heard that, I was very surprised, because when we first purchased down there, I remember talking to her, and I'll tell you about that story. But so they're no longer there. So the church bell ringing is wide open again, and I have taken it upon myself to do that. I love it. It's one of, so yeah, very, very fun to do that. I think the town probably enjoys it too. Hey, it's a reminder. Hey, it's Sunday morning, get to church.
So now I have the visual, Whisper, I have the visual of you, you know, grabbing this bell. It has a knot in it, so it'll hold you, and then you pull it way down, and that brings you way up in the air. And then you come down again and ring it again.
Let me tell you, for a knotted rope to pull me up into the air, that's going to have to be a big old heavy bell.
Isn't that what Quasimodo? Now, do you wear earplugs too when you ring that bell? I mean, the decibels can be pretty loud with the church bells.
It's pretty loud, but I ring it about a half a dozen. Well, probably about eight times, and maybe 10 times if I'm really, really, really in the mood. So. But yeah, there we are. Got my Sunday best overall zone, and I'm ringing the bell out in front of the country church. So yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
That's your black overalls, right? Are those your Sunday best overalls?
No, I just got a real, real nice pair that I don't wear very much, other than maybe church or if I want to look real nice. So they're not all faded, you know, blue jean type of thing. So no, the black pair with the tuck shirt and the bow tie and the cufflinks, that's for weddings and funerals and things like that. But you know, just a really nice clean pair. Not faded out overalls for church. But a story, when I talked to that young lady that lived next to the church, we were talking one Saturday afternoon. I was probably sweeping the front porch, and she started, you know, we were talking just generally. She walked across the street, and she said, you know, there's a lot of history, but that house was built in 1900. And she said something like, yep, I remember old, and I forget that, you know, the house was built in 1900. There's only been two owners. So he said, Mr. So-and-so would sit right there in a chair, lean back, his foot propped up on the front banister, and whenever he'd see somebody coming, he'd say, yo, come here, come on inside, I got something for you. And apparently way back when, somebody was making a little shine in my barn out back. So, and
oh,
I had a,
you
I
have
had
a shiny barn.
I had a hunkering that might be the case when I started finding hundreds and hundreds of different types of glass bottles. It didn't matter if it was an old glass coffee, you know, instant coffee container, an old glass medicine bottle, gallon jugs. There were tons and tons of different types of glass bottles all around my barn. I loved it. I knew what was going on. I'm no dummy. And then when we did a little bit of clearing out back last year, maybe it was the year before, we found some barrels that were back there and other things like that. And so that after that, you know, I had an idea. And then when she told me that, yeah, he would anybody he thought might be interested, he'd be sitting on his front porch and he'd say, hey, buddy, come on inside. I got something for you to try or whatever. So yeah, how about that? How about that for a little bit of history? Yeah, so look at this. Brits and Grits was like somebody was distilling in your barn. I think it's so funny. So to put it politically correct like that, yeah, in other words, there was a still back yonder making a little shine in my barn. Oh,
yes,
those were the good old days.
If you want to be really self-sufficient, Whisper, then you can distill your own gasoline, you know. It might be a handy thing to have back there. Is the still still there? Is the still still there?
No, it is not. No, there's tons of glass bottles that I have collected and I have saved, let me tell you, 100%. And so, you know, there's lots of people out there that someone in the chat room saying they brew their own beer, make their own wine. And from my understanding, I am not an attorney. I don't even know this is to be true. But my understanding is that you can still make shine as long as you're not selling it, or you can make so much per year for personal consumption, you just can't sell it, because then guess what? The revenuers are coming to get you. So, that's what I've been heard and told over the years. I don't know it to be true, but you never know. Some Bard Rock was like, sounds like it's Hazard County all over again.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, interesting the things that get taxed, isn't it? We used to call it, one of my mentors and bosses used to call the Bureau of Alcohol, Firearms, and Tobacco the Bureau of Bad Things.
ATF, but, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess that's been merged or changed now, but. Oh, here it is. You can make up to 100 gallon per person of beer, but you cannot make moonshine. That's from Dragonfly there in the chat room. Wow, 100 gallons of beer
said.
Is a lot of beer. My Lord.
I wonder if that varies from state to state. I'll have to check that out and see if what personal use. That'll be interesting to see. So I'm sure people are still brewing it. I mean, this is the South. I'm sure it's still done. So we'll just one of those things. Me and Jen don't drink, never have. So, you know, it's not a big deal for us. But I love to see all those glass bottles back there. Love to see those and collect those and clean them up and see what they got written on the bottom and a little bit of our history there in the backyard. So, but we had a great weekend. How about you, Pat? What did you do?
Oh gosh, I've had such a fun week, much less the weekend. But it was kind of a chicken weekend. We had our last week, on Thursday, we had the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club meeting, and we were able to meet at the Virginia Horse Center at the Workhorse Cafe, and we had the whole Coliseum to ourselves. It was just amazing. So we had a session with I took one of the chickens I'm thinking about taking up to the D.C. Green Festival just to see how she was going to act with other people, and she's a little too fidgety. She's not really a therapy chicken class, but she's just an awfully sweet little hen. So she's knocked out of the competition. But anyway, we had a session there, talked about the processing clinic that we just had yesterday on Sunday, and then also had a presentation by Elizabeth Souder, who is a forager. She's a true homesteader and forager, and she brought a bunch of persimmons and pawpaws and mushrooms, and we just talked about how to forage. And, of course, and also how your chickens like to forage as well, because they'll certainly eat mushrooms sometimes, although I haven't seen them eat a bunch of them. But,
pawpaws?
Pawpaws, yeah.
Way down yonder in the pawpaw patch. Yonder in the pawpaw patch. My dad would sing that to me, not to get too personal on the radio, but my daddy would sing that to me probably every night for me to get to go to bed. I just never forget that.
Oh, is that right?
It's just... Yep, just about every single night, and I couldn't stand that song. I remember, no. But anyway, good memory.
Well, I know the rest of it. Picking up pawpaws, put them in your pocket. Put them in your pocket. But we put ours in our pockets. You guys must have had more of them, so you put them in a basket.
We had a basket. Probably hand-woven, but, hey, it was a basket. So go ahead.
Well,
I just pawpaw. Would the average nursery have a pawpaw?
Well, you can order it from, of course, Edible Landscapes carries them, and they'll ship out. You know, Michael.
They've been on the radio show.
Show, and they did. I was up there with it. They did a chicken tractor workshop up there, and going to be doing some more. So yeah, they have a wonderful trees in there. I can just call and they'll send you a catalog, or if I've got several here that I've got for our club, I can certainly send you one.
That's pretty cool. I've got to get me some of those.
Yeah.
What I was looking at, and Bard Rock was like, what the heck is a pawpaw?
It's something you put in your pocket.
Yeah, or a basket. And actually,
basket.
He's married to Maw-Maw.
Yeah, that's right. No, Pawpaw's married to Maw-Maw. And great pawpaw.
Yep, absolutely. You know what I was looking for this weekend that I couldn't find? I couldn't find anywhere I went, and I was looking for a hickory. And I'm going to have to probably get online and get some of these online nurseries and whatnot. And nobody that I found, and I've called around to a few places locally, I can't find a hickory tree. And to save my life, I'm going to have to probably find it somewhere, just like I'm going to have to find the pawpaw.
Yeah, they're slow growing, but boy, that shagbark hickory, is that the one you're going to get? I like hickory trees, and the hickory nuts are really cool, too. Yeah. Well, cool. Hickory. Go ahead.
Sure. Nope. I was just going to say someone in the chat room was like, he ain't from around here, Andy.
Yeah. Well, hickories. They're slow growing, though. The hickory wood is just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful
yeah.
wood. But anyway, let me finish up with our processing clinic. That'll kind of take care of my weekend, besides spending quite a bit of time on the computer writing. But we went out to Chicken Alley. They have a little pavilion out there, Dawn Paul and her family. And we did one chicken. We did one rooster. And really went through how to get it a complete bleed out, how to find that little jugular vein. There was a lot of discussion about that. And then just the detailed approaches about how to really, you know, take your time, do it well, and get a good clean beef. And, of course, there was a potluck afterwards. And, of course, as usual, no one had chicken. Except there was meatloaf instead of chicken. But anyway, it was wonderful food and just great camaraderie. So we'll be having several of those. And as we've been talking all along, our club's going to be buying a plucker, hopefully
yeah.
shortly after the new year. So this will be the place where we'll just do group processing, you know, bring your roosters or whatever on out, and we'll just get them all cleaned up. So that was kind of my weekend. The weather was perfect, absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I spent about 4 hours bush hogging this weekend, so I always like that. It's instant gratification to see what's done. I mean, the field looks so clean and smooth, or the yard, whatever I'm working on. So, yep, so bring on Monday. I'm ready for it.
Yep, it's the beginning of another week, and let's go ahead. I've got a couple of brief chickens in the news segments. All of our chickens in the news segments are brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. Visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. I thought a lot about heading up there. In November, we'll be broadcasting live from Meyer Hatchery. I'm looking forward to taking the tour. Yeah, it really is coming up quickly. We'll be up there broadcasting live from Meyer Hatchery on Friday, November 12th. And then again on Saturday, November 13th, we'll be broadcasting live at the Ohio National Poultry Show. Folks, you got to come out and got to come out to the poultry show. 7,000-plus birds, probably that many people. It's going to be awesome. Largest poultry show in the country, and I'm really starting to get excited about it. So you can visit them online at ohionational.org. ohionational.org or meyerhatchery.com. We'll pick you out some new baby chicks for this fall. First thing we have is City Hatching an Idea on Backyard Chickens. This is right in my backyard here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We've talked about this, and they're really hitting it hard, and I'm going to be we'll be sharing this along the way. City Hatching an Idea on Backyard Chickens. This is by Cliff Hightower. Some Chattanooga residents are crying foul over the city not allowing fowl in their backyards. Most people are taught that chickens are dirty and dumb, but they're not, said Melanie Mayo, Director of Education and Outreach at Crabtree Farms and the chairwoman of the city's Food and Agricultural Action Team. The city council is set to discuss a proposal allowing backyard chickens during the legal and legislative committee meeting Tuesday. A draft ordinance would allow up to 15 hens on the premises, but no roosters. Gotta love it. That's a great number. Mayo said there are a lot of misconceptions about chickens, such as they're being harmful to people because of threats of disease. What carries disease more than chicken poo is cat and doggy poo, Mayo said. She said studies have found hardly any risk associated with chickens. On the plus side, pet poultry can provide eggs and help children learn about the food chain. Karen Walsh, executive director of the McCamey Animal Care and Adoption Center, says the city needs to wade gingerly into the pet poultry waters. She said, for one thing, she said, if a chicken escapes its pen and is found wandering around, McCamey doesn't have any place to put it. The center would have to build pens, she said. Really? I put my chicken in a dog pen all the time when I travel, and surely they have plenty of cat and dog pens there at the animal shelter. There's that'll contain a chicken just like anything else, Miss Karen Walsh. For one thing, she said, we don't want it to be a burden on the taxpayer. Councilman Peter Murphy, chairman of the Legal and Legislative Committee, said most of the people who have spoken to him seem in favor, or at least for hens. Most of the opposition is not to have roosters, of course, and that wouldn't be included in the ordinance anyway. So good luck to you up there in Chattanooga. You're only about 2 hours away from me. That'd be a nice little drive. I love the city of Chattanooga. We've done several events up there at Sonic and at Tractor Supply, so we may have to schedule another event to support and bring some more media to the fact that people in Chattanooga want backyard poultry. And we've got one more here from congratulations, the Southeast Missourian, and this time comes to us from Scott Moyers. Chicken coop. Cape Man's love for fresh eggs could prompt council to allow chickens within city limits. It says, Amelia likes to fly, or try to. Ruby's red and Scarlet's a bit on the temperamental side. Those who drive past the house on South Lamar Street and Cape Girardeau would see them and the seven others simply as a flock of chickens scratching around on the backyard of a city street miles away from the nearest farm. But to Nelson Sparks and his girlfriend, Maggie, they're the girls. We love them, he said. We raise them from babies. They're our pets. That's why when the city put a nuisance violation notice on their door 6 weeks ago demanding that the chickens be removed, Sparks had no interest in emptying his nest. Now, it says here, and I don't know all the details, it said they put a nuisance violation. I'm wondering what the nuisance was and how long they had them before they got this nuisance ordinance. People love to throw around that nuisance name. Oh, I love nuisance this, nuisance that. But if these girls, doesn't say quite how old they are, but it's talking about, you know, being a nuisance. And I'm thinking, how long did they have them before they got this so-called nuisance violation notice? If they've had them for months, how could they be much of a nuisance if they've had them for months and they're just now getting a notice? That doesn't sound like a nuisance to me. So, but he went to the city council and petitioned them to change the city ordinances to allow the keeping and raising of chickens within the city limits. He even took a note from his doctor explaining the health benefits of fresh eggs. The city now seemed poised to change the law so that Sparks and others can enjoy the health benefits of fresh, free-range eggs. We just wanted to keep our girls, he said. They ain't bothering nobody. We love the eggs, and they're good for me. Says the council is set to vote on the ordinance at its meeting tonight. The new ordinance is modeled after a recently enacted law in Columbia, Missouri, that allows residents to keep a maximum of 10 hens in a controlled environment. No roosters are allowed, and chickens cannot become a nuisance. So there you have it. So good luck to you in in southeast Missouri, voting tonight to allow up to 10 backyard hens and as pet chickens. So how awesome is that? And congratulations. We hope that takes place. Do you have any chickens in the news to add, Pat, before we take a break and bring on our special guest today?
Yes, I do. I've got some really cool news here. One of them is the students adopt chickens to learn the responsibility and finances. So this is at Grand Rapids. This comes to us from the Grand Rapids Press by Caitlin Swango, S-H-A-W-G-O, Swango. And I love this story. And it's got some wonderful pictures. I'll post the link there on the website. But this is at Belford School. What they've got is they had 62 students that were apparently in this class, and Friday morning, each of them paired up with a chicken. And over that chicken, they will take care of, the individual student will take care of that chicken over the course of the year, and then the class as a whole will monitor how much they eat, how much it costs to keep them, the whole economics and responsibility about going into keeping chickens. They'll follow along, these 62 students. So what happened is 100 brown hens arrived at the school, and the chickens are, let's see, I'm mumbling here a little bit because I'm jumping ahead. I'm so excited about this article. 100 brown chickens arrived, and what happened is the chickens have to choose the students. So chickens, apparently the students went in, they were all around the chickens, and they'd get down. Some of the chickens would jump up on the students' laps, and other ones were just bonding one way or another. Yeah, I mean, the pictures on this web, it's from mlive.com, are so adorable, these pictures. They've got chickens riding around on the students' heads, and then the kids are so happy. They've got one young gal is just holding her chicken, cuddling with it, and the chicken's up by her chin, and she has the most beautiful look on her face. It's absolutely bliss. And the other ones are just playing with their chickens. So it says here they're going to keep track of things like how much feed the chickens eat, the number of eggs they lay, and at the end of the year, most students, this is the sad part, will have to give up their chickens because they're not allowed at the local, currently yet they're not allowed in Grand Rapids. But maybe by the end of the year those laws will be changed. We can only hope. It says, otherwise they'll go back to the chicken farm. And because of the chicken ban within the city limits, the school plans to discuss the issue by hosting a forum forum with students and local officials. Now, Whisper, this is a new tactic to get chickens legal in a city. You get the students all hyped up, you give them chickens, and of course they're going to fall in love with them and they'll be pets. And then you talk to the officials. Say, look at these guys. What kind of a meanie would keep a chicken away from its owner? I think this is brilliant. Anyway, he said, the chicken walk around the grounds, and as they were walking around, they were shouting their chickens' new names. Some had sophisticated names, such as Natasha, Sophia, Nellie, that's Nellie, and while others were given whimsical names like Crouton, Slappy, and the GBs, short for gummy bears, GB for gummy bears. So anyway, the students, says the students are easy to catch, they're really tame, and they've decided to just go on with it. And the finally one says, yes, I'm so glad my chicken chose me, was the final comment from one of the students. So that's one little piece of news. How are we doing on time, Whisper? I've got a couple more, but if we have a guest coming on, I can save these for later.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's save them for tomorrow, because we got a great show coming up tomorrow as well. I want to get Aaron on here. Today is the third Monday of the month, which means it's another great episode of the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. He's going to be talking a little bit about emergency shelters, my understanding. So let me go ahead and I'll go to a real quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll bring Aaron on to make sure we get all the information that we need to get out to our listeners about this particular topic, and that'll be great. I want to thank you real quick, send out a thank you into the chat room for sending me this link to Aaron's nursery online, and they've got hickory trees anywhere from 2 to 3 feet tall to 8 to 10 feet tall, ranging in price, all different types of varieties here, hickory tree, and shipping is not that bad either. In fact, it's a lot more affordable than I thought to have a tree shipped to me. So how cool is that? Thank you very much. I'm going to save this site. So folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, it's another great episode of the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley, and he'll be come on talking to us a little bit about emergency shelters today. So stay with us. We'll be back right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialists. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brensea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, Manipro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manipro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off.
The Clapper.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today. Yep, it's Monday. We're all here and we're geared up for another long work week, but we do have a great shows lined up for you today. As well as tomorrow. Let me tell you who we've got coming on tomorrow's show. Looks like we've got Dan Brown, president of the Pennsylvania Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyles Festival. He is also the owner of EcoStruction, doing green renovation, passive solar, solar hot water, and green design. Also joining will be Philip Jones, who manages a lot of the workshops at the festival. So how cool is that? Looking forward to them. And then this coming Wednesday is open. We hope to have another show about gardening for you this Wednesday. And then, of course, this Thursday will be another great episode of this Thursday, which week is that? Ah, here we go. Yes, Poultry Today with Dr. McCray this Thursday, and then another fun Friday. We'll get there, folks. We'll get to this Friday, I assure you, and we'll have a lot of fun and learn a lot about poultry doing it. All righty, it's now time to bring on our wonderful guest host today. A special guest, of course, being the third Monday, it's the Preparedness Show with Aaron Mackley. Welcome, Aaron. Thanks for coming on today.
Well, thank you. It's always glad to be here, and we always have a fun time.
We have a great time. And I may have kind of told, I don't know, when I think about this, I think emergency shelter, but I think you have a more technical term for what we're going to be talking about today. Let me remind everybody to go ahead and get some pen and paper out. This is one of those shows you definitely take notes that maybe websites will refer to or dimensions or just technical information. So pen and paper would be handy. But Aaron, tell us a little bit about what you're going to teach us today.
Well, you know, last time I was on, we talked a little bit about nuclear preparedness, and we talked about sheltering, trying to be prepared so we kind of have an idea of what the radioactivity and, you know, how to kind of prepare for that as far as density of materials and different things like that. And then the question started to come up, well, what about the chemical and biological, which wasn't originally my plan to talk a whole lot about that, but I've decided, we can talk a little bit more about that today because
Great.
It's a very different type of preparation, whereas chemical and biological, you're trying to go down deep into the ground or into the basement or, you know, you're getting, you know, we talked about between, you know, concrete or like 3 feet of dirt around you, you know, on your home or something like that. In this case, you're talking very different, and the risks are different. The, for example, in a nuclear type thing, you're thinking about potential blast zone, but even outside of the blast zone where you still have nuclear fallout, how long to stay there. Or the chemical environment, chemical or biological. And see, those are two different things in by themselves. A chemical could be anything from a major chemical spill, industrial chemical gets spilled on a railroad track or something like that, and it's, you know, in the air, versus a biological type thing, and that ranges from anything like a bird flu type situation to more of a terrorist type, centralized terrorist thing that gets spread. And so it's really, when we try to lump it all together, it's they're all different types of threat. So what I want to talk a little bit is kind of help try to identify the different types of threats that are there. I don't know if I could tell you the risk of each one because, you know, frankly, the risk is 100% or 0% depending upon, you know, what happens. So it's not like we expect this one and we don't expect that one. It's just if these things could happen at any time. Probably the number one thing to be prepared for those things would be a radio, so you know what's going on, so you have access to some form of news. Because the most critical thing is knowing and hearing where the threat might be, where, you know, what or how long it is, or if it's persisting, or if the air, or if the rain, or the sun has made it evaporate. Rain and sun will make chemical or things that are airborne dissipate much quicker, especially with the chemical type things, and make them evaporate much quicker. So really, the radio is your biggest ally. Just knowing, because there are people that are taking, you know, they do take responsibility to inform us, and it's a good thing for those type of people. It's a wonderful thing. But let me talk a little bit about the shelters. Let's just assume that we're, first of all, there's two principles that we need to keep in mind. If we're talking about maybe an epidemic type situation, you know, maybe it was last year, I think it was, that people started really getting concerned about maybe there's the big flu virus is going on and it's going to be a pandemic, pan meaning around the world, pandemic. Endemic means widespread, pandemic means around the world. So it's just, you know, different prefixes there. When that happens, those types of viruses and things are typically less airborne. They may be somewhat airborne, but they're more commonly passed from person to person. And if they are virulent meaning highly transferable from person to person, either through the air or through touch, then the sooner that you are separated from the environment, the better. So really, for a situation that is more of a pandemic type thing, such as a serious flu or maybe a bird flu or anything like that, there's really only one way to separate yourself, and that is simply to separate yourself from, and what they call is, it's a plan that they called CIRQ, S-I-R-Q, standing for self-imposed reverse quarantine. Rather than trying to find everybody in, back in the old days, many, you know, years and years ago, when people would have maybe like leprosy or something like that that they didn't know how to control at that point, they would quarantine those people and put them into a centralized location to try to control the spread, where something like this can spread around the world literally before people know it. If you've seen any of the, you know, what I call the sensational films, the ones that try to show the extreme and it's going to wipe us all out and all of that kind of thing, then, you know, you could realize that someone in Japan might have a flu and get on an airplane, and everybody in the airplane may be exposed either through touch or maybe through the ventilation, you know, and they land in the United States, and then it's in the United States. Someone from there, catches a connecting flight, and now it's in Europe. Literally can go around the world in 24 hours or less. And so those kind of things, if we were ever notified that there is a serious threat, the primary thing we can do is keep ourselves self-quarantined, meaning we take our family and we don't go out. The problem with that is most of us aren't ready for that kind of thing. And how do I, you know, and how long? And but when those kind of things spread, by the time you know that you might be at risk, you may have already contracted the disease without knowing it, and may not see the evidence of it for 2 to 3 or 5 days, depending on the
incubation period.
Yes, the incubation. Thank you. The incubation period. So the real key into something like that is you simply have to be aware and say, okay, so what do I do? I have to be willing and ready to self-quarantine, you know, to quarantine yourself and your family, and say for how long. Now, in a home, you know, people like, I work from my own home doing, you know, computer work, and my family, we are homeschool, so we're almost already self-quarantined. We grow our own garden, so we don't go to the store that frequently either. So, you know, we self-quarantine ourselves, but most people don't live that way. Most people are in the school system. Most people are working. And so when you begin to hear discussions, the first okay, I mentioned the first thing you need to know is have a radio. But the second thing is you need to have those serious discussions with your spouse or your children or whoever is within your household and say, okay, this may be serious, so what do we do and when do we do it? If it becomes a point where people are saying, oh, it's serious, we need to self-quarantine, and it becomes a rush to self-quarantine, it probably is already too late, meaning that you one or more people in your family have been have contracted whatever it could be in a situation like that. And so then you have to watch carefully to quarantine within your own house. That's when you would quarantine versus it's kind of you're doing a self-quarantine, and then if you get someone inside, you want to keep those as much as possible isolated. Having flu protection kits for anything of that nature is very, I think it's part of our standard, the things that we have in our storage. We have flu protection kits that would last enough for our family for, I think we have 2 to 3 weeks worth of masks and gloves and hand sanitizers and those kind of, there's a number of things. Life Secure is probably the best company I have found for that kind of material. It's lifesecure.com. These guys' specialty is they have emergency protection kits and things like that. Their focus is on the medical and having good medical kits in schools and in home. And we've purchased a couple of those full kits from them. So I really like that company. They've been a wonderful company that you call them and ask them questions and they answer. So, but that's kind of having it ready on the side. They can stay there forever. They come in a enclosed 5-gallon bucket because you use that bucket for other purposes and things. It has all the instructions on it and just keep it sealed up. And it's really a good thing that way. And I don't have any affiliation with them other than I've worked with them and it's the best one that I found. Because that's what their specialty is. Now, what do we do as far as something like a chemical type thing? Now, in such a situation like that, that could be something that lasts for literally an hour to something that could last for days, depending upon the seriousness of the spill, whether or not it was spread. If it's something, generally a chemical. It's going to be a contained area, but it's going to probably have it's going to be airborne. You're going to have the chemical. For example, if you have a serious noxious chemical, breathing the air will suffocate you or cause damage, burn, or other types of serious disease problem in your lungs or skin. And so those are the types of things. So we've talked about this concept of shelter in place. That's the term of I think Andy was talking about. That's if you're searching on the internet to get more information about sheltering in place or trying to be protected, that's the term you want to search for. That's what most of the documentation will have that terminology. A shelter in place concept is this, that you go in, you actually seal off a room. And the bigger the room that you can seal off, the better, because the primary problem that wasn't really talked about for quite a while when they started talking about sheltering in place. As a matter of fact, the documentation on some of the government websites, some of the government websites didn't even talk about this problem, and that is oxygen. And it's actually a dual problem. And that's the second thing that they don't talk about. They talk about the oxygen now, but they frequently don't talk about carbon dioxide. They talk about, well, you need to have oxygen in that so you can actually get more oxygen. But the problem is if you've completely sealed off a room, which, by the way, it's very, very difficult to completely seal off a room. Our homes just aren't built that way. But to seal off a room with duct tape and plastic, covering all the air and the vents, the doors, the cracks, and everything like that. If you, as much as possible, seal off a room, you have an adequate oxygen and calculate that you need in a resting environment, roughly 5 cubic feet of air per person. Per minute. 5 cubic feet of air per minute. Okay? In a stressed environment, that can go up to 2 to 3 times as high. So now you're talking 10 to 15 cubic feet of air per person. So a room of four, if you have four adults, maybe you have 2 adults, 2 children, so it might be a little less. 4 adults in a 10-foot by 10-foot room, that's a bedroom size, maybe a small to medium-sized bedroom. You're only going to be in there for maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours. Okay? Now, maybe that's all that's necessary. But so the best thing is to think about what your area is. And typically, the best area would be probably a master bedroom, because or any other large bedroom that has access, immediate access to a bathroom next to it. A master bed with a bath. I think I said that wrong. Anyway, a master bedroom that has a bath connected to it that it can also be sealed off. So you don't seal them separately. You seal it as one compartment using duct tape around the edges and plastic to seal off as much as you can. But the problem, again, comes back to oxygen and carbon dioxide. So that is the major thing. So you have to think, all right, how extensive do I want to make my preparations? What are my risk environment? If you're out in the far country area, you have a much less risk for most of those things than people in the city and if you're in an apartment-type situation. So then you have to say, okay, all right, I need to be protected for this. What level of protection? Am I going to do it for a two-hour thing? I'm going to seal off my room really fast, and we're going to hope that whatever the major symptoms of the have gone in 2 to 3 hours, or do I want to try to do something more sophisticated? If that's the case, now you need to start looking at an air filtering system and a way to put it in place. So that can take some significant effort or money. If you have plenty of money, then they have some great filtering systems. You want to look for a HEPA filter, H-E-P-A, that's all caps. I forget what it's, environmental protection or anyway. It's a filter that cleans out 99% of the toxics and includes a carbon-based filter that also takes out pretty much all of the chemicals and or biological problems that would be in the air. That's what HEPA filters are all about. And they have even more sophisticated ones, but now you're talking many thousands of dollars. But you can buy HEPA filters that are built to pull in fresh air and filter it through the filter and then push out your oxygenated, your carbon dioxide off. We're breathing in the oxygen, we're breathing out carbon dioxide. If you don't replace, even if you have adequate oxygen, say you had oxygen, big oxygen tanks, or maybe you have oxygen tanks that someone that breathes oxygen on a regular basis, and you can use some of those oxygen tanks to give you plenty of oxygen. The problem is you get asphyxiation from the carbon dioxide that you're breathing out. And so you have to be able to get that out. If you remember, if any of you have watched the movie Apollo 13, you remember that, they had their oxygen tanks blast, and so they were worried about the oxygen. It wasn't very long until they realized, oh, the carbon dioxide was what was now getting up, and they had a level of like 15 parts per million, I think what it is, and it becomes toxic to your brain. You start losing coherence, and then pretty soon, your brain will shut down. And so they created a filter out of socks and other things like that. Of course, they weren't trying to get they were trying to filter out just the carbon dioxide. And they had a little pump that would pump the air through this filter, and it could lower that. And that actually happened, and that's what you can do. With a HEPA filter, you can bring in outside air. So what I would probably do is design, if I'm thinking ahead, and I'll tell you the truth, I have not designed one of these, okay? So I can't speak on this from experience. I can think of what I know and what I would try to do. And I thought about, as I was preparing this, I really ought to get this in place. I know about it. I just haven't done it. I would create a filter that would fit in one of my windows that I could seal off, that I could, and then I would use that filter, and I would create a manual pump that would be similar to like the old bellows that you'd use to start a fire, and it would have to be much bigger than that, and I would create one of those that I could pump air in and out, okay? By pumping the, essentially what you have to do is you pump air in, and then you have, and then the air pressure can also push it out, but you can also make it so it pumps air in and out at the same time. And it's really a pretty simple way of using a big bellows. Last week I talked about a book called Nuclear War Survival Skills. In that book, it shows how to create an air filter, a big air filter using a screen. You use a filter the size of a door, literally, and it's all sealed up so that what you do is you're actually opening and closing the door. You do that about 10 times, and you've refreshed the airflow. But what you have to do is have, if you're trying to use it with a HEPA filter, which are much smaller, you've got to push that air in through and out through that filter, or in through one filter and out. It doesn't have to be filtered, but it has to be sealed so that air is not coming in that filter. It will, in other words, when you're pulling it in, the air pressure will as it's coming in, will seal, and then when you're pushing out, it will open so that the air flows out and then seals again. It's kind of like your heartbeat type thing. That book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, shows you how to design one of those. And, of course, it was designed to keep the nuclear particles from coming through. And so nuclear particles, it's a different thing. You're filtering out the particles, not the radiation. Okay? Radiation is in the particles. You filter out the particles, you don't get the radiation. So that's the way that's designed to work there. So anyway, the real critical pieces that we have to talk about and look at is how long – What do you calculate to be your risk factor? That's what you have to look at and say, if it's likely, I mean, I live right next to a train location or into a big city area that is threatened by, you know, bioterrorists and stuff like that. Am I in that kind of environment? Or am I out in the country way out that's just not as likely? And have to decide, okay, what are my risk factors? And then make some of those changes and say, okay, do I need a flu protection kit because of some of those that we need to, you know, separate our people, you know, separate ourselves from the population. Number two is if someone in your population, your small population, your home, gets infected, then can I also separate them from my population and get them so I can treat them for the flu without endangering other people of the family? Can I wash up and clean up and keep myself, those things separate? Then the question is, do I need a chemical type of thing? Just start thinking about what you would do. The thing about chemical spills and biological spills, those, we have no warning. Those will happen or they won't. Think about a nuclear type thing. It's likely we will get some sort of an indication, unless, of course, we get a dirty bomb. But they're generally, you know, on nuclear, they're paying pretty close attention. Chemical and biological would be more difficult to track. Anybody could drop a vial of serious stuff, and people track it over and spread it before anybody even knows what's going on. So, you know, it's just, you know, we live in a somewhat dangerous world. I think a lot less dangerous than some of the alarmists would say we live in, but at the same time, those threats are to some degree there. So anyway, those are kind of the main things that I wanted to talk about. Unless there's questions that I can answer that would help people understand the topic a little bit better.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, yeah. I have a personal philosophy that I kind of take to the flu and the disease sort of pandemic thing, and that is I keep myself really healthy, and if I know I'm going to be out and exposed, which I have to, I mean, I have to go out, I'm a pharmacist, so of course I'm going to be on the front lines, I'll just, and if I come home feeling really achy or whatever, I'll just really try to nip it in the bud and, you know, high doses of vitamin C, some B complex, and probably take a sauna or two and sweat it out, and then just take it easy. Is that, so far that's worked for me. I got the swine flu shortly after it started going around, and it knocked me out for about 3 days, but instead of 2 weeks, is all I can say. So is that a possibility, too, for those of us that can't really stay home and do the self-imposed reverse quarantine?
Well, you know, it's a good point. There are segments of our population that simply cannot, a majority of simply cannot stay home because, number one, their responsibilities and maybe in the healthcare industry or something like that. They will be very, you know, I have great admiration for people like law enforcement and the emergency groups and the medical, because in those types of situations, they are the ones that are on the front lines and take, you know, the bulk of the threat, if you will. And yet, mm-hmm. at the same time, they also have more training and preparation as well. Obviously, keeping ourselves healthy and being prepared for those. For the common person who is, the more that you can stay away from those, you realize that prior to that swine flu or that the swine flu outbreak that was coming out, you never would go into a Walmart or a big box store, or, you know, some of these places, and see hand wipes, which you do now everywhere. Every store that you go to, it seems like. I mean, I was at a plumbing store. I mean, these guys are plumbers, construction people, and they're using hand, you go to the libraries and you see this hand wipes and sanitizers and things like that. So people are much more aware of it. Now, the good and bad about that is this. We may be more aware of it and we are keeping ourselves more clean, but that means our bodies are also not fighting it off as much. And therefore, my concept is I do want to keep my good health by taking good vitamins and things like that and eating healthy. But at the same time, I don't necessarily try to always wipe out every type of disease. You know, I want my body to be constantly maintaining its immunity system and fighting and building an immunity
right.
system.
Right, absolutely.
And so, yeah. So the thing is that as we as a society have wiped out and sterilized more and more, it means our bodies haven't had to fight as much, which is great, except that one, some of those things, it's the same thing as like, you know, we're using, penicillin or any of the cillins, if you will. You know, we have to just make them stronger and stronger because we use them more and more. There will come a time when we just can't make them strong enough because our bodies are getting used to fighting those, and also the strains are getting stronger. So that's, I kind of have a thing is, yeah, you got to watch, but you know, I want my body to fight things off, and then if I get sick, I'll deal with it and fight it, you know. But generally, my body can fight those. The things that I got to prepare against are things that are really drastic, like a chemical spill or some of these viruses like the H1N1. See, we didn't get the H1N1. That is H5N1. I can't remember. Anyway,
yeah,
the bird flu. It's H5N1, I think, is what it is. The bird flu that it still hasn't hit, but they're just that when it goes through, it's much, much stronger than anything that we have. And that's why they're concerned about it, and that's why the self-imposed quarantine is important. So, but as far as this concept of sheltering in place for a chemical-type spill, in one way I say that's an alarmist view, because I think it's not likely for those things. And number two, unless you have a good air filter system, you've got a serious problem with air very quickly, and you'll die that long before you die of any of the chemical exposure. So you think out, you know, make a plan and say, if this is something I feel like I've got a risk for, then say, I need to actually think about the air get the HEPA filter. HEPA filters are not expensive. A good-sized HEPA filter that you could use to build a hand pump made out of a little bit of wood and maybe some plastic bags that are sealed and taped, and you could pump a lot of air if you built it around a HEPA filter. So you're talking maybe $35-$40, and you can build a filter, but you've got to think about that ahead of time. Where would I put it? How do I install it and still seal it? I think about, would I put it on a window? Would I put it on a door? If I open the door, I've got to, do the whole door. If I open the window, I've got to have a way to seal off all of the area of the window that's not being used on the filter. So these are things you have to think ahead of time. So once you do those, and you have those, and you've tested it, that yes, it's pumping air in and out, I would assume that my HEPA filter is doing what it's supposed to. All I have to test is whether or not I'm pumping enough air. And again, 5 cubic feet of air per person per minute is what you're going to be consuming in a less unstressed environment, more like 10 to 15 in a stressed environment. So you've got to be able to pump that much air. It may be someone is sitting there pumping back, taking
Aaron, turns. I've got a question here too, Aaron, because it kind of comes up with what Andy introduced about the tick. Is the father-in-law getting a tick bite? And that is, I think it's pretty clear, at least in our area, that Lyme's disease is epidemic, and more people have it than even know that happens. Now, after you get one of these amazingly virulent kinds of diseases, and a lot of the people here, including my personal physician, her whole family has Lyme's, but they're just finding there's nothing there that is very useful in the high-level antibiotics for long-term type of things. Do you have any suggestions for coping with some of these really super virulent kind of diseases like Lyme's? And,
I will preface it with this. I'm not qualified to answer that question. I really am not. Mm-hmm. I can't say I'm in the medical industry. I know how to deal with those. My tendency is that I trust the natural remedies. I trust going to a lot of the strong things like our garlics and our I go back to a lot of the old natural remedies. We have several books that we go back and look at. I do go to my response is I go to the doctor if I'm bleeding to death or if mm-hmm. I'm really in pain. And I can say there's a problem that's internal. I've got something to solve here. But as far as a health perspective, I let my body do as much as I can. I want my body to fight it. I don't mind being sick once in a while because I want my body to fight it. I just want to give it everything it can on a natural basis so that it will fight its own disease. That way it's stronger against any of the diseases. Now, Lyme disease, I don't know. Is there a natural thing? I personally would. If there's not a medical answer, I would definitely go and see if maybe there is some things that have helped the body fight those. I just don't know. I'm not qualified to give an answer to that. But I would look. I would certainly see what I could find out, especially mm-hmm. if the medical industry doesn't have something that can knock it out. The nice thing about the medical industry is this. I'm one of these. I go to both. I like natural health, but our research has done tremendous things to teach us. And so I'd say, okay, medical industry, if they don't have something, then I'm going to go and look at health then. But at the same time, if they have something that's going to break the problem and stop it, and then I go back and rebuild my body with natural things again, I'm going to do that. Because I want mm-hmm. to solve the problem. But at the same time, I try to do as much as I can to build it healthy.
Well, that's good advice. I mean, you can't beat that kind of advice. So just stay as healthy as you can and then trust nature and do the best you can if you do get something virulent like that. Whisper, we're just about coming down to trivia time. Do you have any more questions for Aaron?
I do not. Lots of great information, and hopefully everybody took a lot of notes because that was a lot of great information that Aaron shared with us, as always. That's why I said at the beginning, before he came on, get a pen and paper out because there's always lots of valuable information you're going to want to try to remember. and whether it be when he was talking about the cubic feet of air needed and for how long that is. I mean, all that information. So I always try to remind people on those shows. I know they're going to want to remember things. Get that pen and paper ready. But other than that, I think everybody got lots of great conversation going on in the chat room, too, right along as Aaron was talking about every little subject right now. We're talking about antibiotics and using the hand wipes and the gel and even adding some bleach to the water to kill germs versus maybe using an antibacterial soap. So all kinds of great information and topics were sparked in the chat room. So, Aaron, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you for
some more of your time, educating all of our listeners on this subject. It's something that we should all keep in our minds of what ifs, because our whole lives are based on what ifs. What does tomorrow bring? And we never know. So lots of folks in the chat room saying thank you very much for your time and effort. As always, every couple of weeks you come on and share your knowledge about preparedness, and that's what the show is all about. So, Aaron, we hope you have a good couple of weeks, and we'll look forward to seeing you here in a couple of weeks from today.
I will. Now, I was just going to mention before I drop off here real quick.
Sure.
The 1st of November, it's on November 1st, we will be talking about medical preparedness kits and triage, meaning in a serious situation. And this is something that will occur. It's just a matter of when. In whichever location, we're going to talk about different types of kits. This isn't just this isn't your first aid kit. This is talking about medical kits and triage. We're going to talk more about that next week, or in 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks, great, perfect, very good. Triage and medical kits. That is excellent information. And Pat maybe can sound off on that too. She'll be looking forward to that because she dishes out a lot of that stuff every day when she's at the pharmacy. And so that's and she has a lot of knowledge about natural cures and treatments as well. So that'll be a great show. Definitely looking forward to that. You want to mark your calendars 2 weeks from today, folks. All righty, Aaron, thank you so much again for joining us. We look forward to the next show. How exciting.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Aaron. Boy, that was interesting.
That really was.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, my. I do. I have got 3 pages of notes here. I just kept scribbling away. So anyway, so trivia time, Whisper.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead. Let me take a commercial break, and then, well, you know what? Let me answer the question. We always do that, give them the benefit of the doubt of calling in or trying to look up the information. And today is Monday, which means, of course, every Monday is sponsored by Crazy K Farm and the Hen Saver. Visit them online right now at hensaver.com. Hensaver.com. Hen Saver aprons can protect your hens from an overly affectionate rooster, of course, and it could repel a unexpected hawk attack, as you hear on their ad every day here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. They're very affordable, and they're quite stylish, actually. A lot of people that have actually purchased them, I think they've sold over 10,000 units of these Hen Saver hen aprons. Yeah, and so they are definitely sweeping the nation, whether it be for just for the purpose of the predators, for the purpose of the overzealous and overloving rooster, pulling out all those feathers on the back of their lovely hens, or if it's just for stylish, unique masterpieces to talk about. So when you travel around, or if your friends and neighbors come by, so has all kinds of great reasons why you want to go to hensaver.com. And so that's today's chicken trivia. Somebody today, the winner of that question, is going to win a Hen Saver hen apron from Crazy K Farm. Again, hensaver.com. It is a Chicken Whisperer approved item. So let me go ahead and scroll up here so I can get the current question. We're going to take caller number, let's see, we'll take caller number 9. We haven't done that in a long time. Caller number 9, the question is, in fact, there are special guests on this radio show every single month. Who is the current president of the American Poultry Association? Who is the current president of the American Poultry Association? If you know the answer to that question, 347-637-3237, caller number 9, 347-637-3237, call in, press 1 when prompted, so we know you want to participate in the contest. When we come out back after the commercial break, we'll see if we can't get a winner today. Again, caller number 9-347-637-3237. Again, today is Monday, sponsored by The Hen Saver. Visit them online at hensaver.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, the incubation specialists. Brinsea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run. But do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All right. righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We made it through Monday, folks. Tomorrow's Tuesday. We're one day closer to Friday. Hallelujah. How about that? All righty. It's time to go to the phone lines because we're running out of time. Let's see what we've got here. All righty. Caller calling in from area code, caller number 9, calling in from area code 603. 603, if you'll state your name and tell us what state you're calling from, please.
Hi, it's Diana from New Hampshire.
Hi, Diana from New Hampshire. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. It couldn't be better for a Monday, that is. And let me get over here to the question. We'll ask it one more time. Who is the current president of the awesome American Poultry Association? And your answer is?
Samuel Brush.
That's it. Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Congratulations from New Hampshire and Diana. And are you on Facebook, I have to ask?
I am.
Okay, and if you're a friend, that's great. If not, just request to be my friend, Andy Schneider, there on Facebook. And then my picture is me yapping into a microphone. And just send me over your shipping address. I'll get that to Toby out there at Crazy K Farm, and she'll contact you. Because you'll have to more than likely pick out which pattern you would like for the hen saver. So how cool is that? Thank you very much for listening this Monday morning and Monday afternoon. And we will thank you very much for listening. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All righty, Pat. Well, I guess that's going to wrap it up. It was a great show. Very interesting. Had a super winner. Diana from New Hampshire was the winner of the Crazy K Farm Hen Saver Hen Apron. Visit them online at hensaver.com. Over 10,000 of those puppies have been sold. And tomorrow is Tuesday. We'll have a great prize at the end of the show from eggcartons.com. And tomorrow, like I said, we have an awesome show. You're not going to want to miss it, folks. It looks like we're going to have Dan Brown, president of the Pennsylvania Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyles Festival. He's the owner of EcoStruction, which is doing green renovation, passive solar, and solar hot water and green design. And also joining us will be Philip Jones, who manages many of the workshops there at the festival. So you're not going to want to miss the show tomorrow. Again, we thank you for tuning in today, and congratulations to all our winners and all our sponsors. And, Pat, take it away. Oh, by the way, real quick, we are set up and ready to roll with the chicken coop contest. So that will start tomorrow. We were hoping to start it today. We had one last thing to approve, and so we are ready to roll. So tomorrow, another chicken coop contest. This will be like our sixth or seventh chicken coop we've given away on the radio show. We give away more prizes than anybody else in the backyard poultry industry, and we're proud of that because of our awesome, awesome sponsors. So chicken coop contest starts tomorrow. Pat?
Yeah. Well, yes. What a great show. And I've got to say, those hen aprons that we gave away today, I'm one of the 10,000 people that have one, and I just got two of the diapers, so I'm going to be playing around with those. Anyway, thanks again to everybody. Yeah. Yeah, they came over the weekend. Thanks to Aaron Mackley of Pazumpa.com for talking to us about emergency preparedness and, of course, epidemics and then how to just be prepared for all those kinds of things. Andy Schneider, thanks to you for bringing us together and all that you do for the chicken movement. We're all clucking along much more merrily because of you. Yo! And thanks to the chat room chickeneers for also clucking along. Where would we be without you and all our listeners? Thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, chat, and video services. And, of course, as always and forever, blessings to all you all, and may the flock be with you. God bless everybody.